Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of The School for Dumb Women. In episode 60, we invited Gavin Day to the studio to tell us about how and when art got so damn expensive. Gavin happens to be the most handsome and accomplished man in all of London. He washes daily and reads newspapers in print, not online. He also happens to be the designer of the School for Dumb Women artwork.
And he's my boyfriend, and a damn good one too.
Anyway, here's our full conversation, including a scandalous one-way relationship with Nigella Lawson.
So Hannah, you've gone slightly green and pale. You look very scared and weak and maybe malnourished. What's going on?
Yeah, no, I've not been eating lately, Alex, because a few weeks ago I spent my life savings on 3 centimetres of shredded Banksy. And honestly, I still can't tell whether it's an investment or not, maybe because of my low blood sugar.
It's okay, come on.
But luckily, I've invited Gavin Day here.
Hello all.
That name is familiar to me.
Gavin Day.
Somehow.
Good evening.
See, a famous artist.
Resident art expert for this evening only, I think.
Yeah.
I'm a graphic designer, that's okay.
So Gavin Day does the logos for School for Dumb Women, the excellent logo. And you're here to tell me how soon Sotheby's will be Venmoing me my money.
Well, that's not going to happen, but that's not terribly a bad thing.
Oh.
Okay, so the thing about art is that you want to buy it but keep it and then sell it in the future. So Venmoing you the money might not actually be the best thing.
Can I ask what Venmo is?
Venmo is a thing that Twitter does, right, where you make a good tweet and then people ask for it.
That is exactly correct.
Venmo me.
PayPal for hipsters.
Yes.
Friend said this. My friend lives in LA and he's a film producer. That sounds like a massive brag, but it's true. And he mentioned this the other day and I just pretended like I knew what it was, because he said that he went on a date where he's the most generous and rich person I've ever met. And he said that she made him spend so much money that she had to Venmo him some money the next day.
Wow.
Ooh. And I was like, oh, what is that?
Well, luckily this is a podcast about art exploration, so.
Yeah.
Just quickly about Venmo, I have seen people actually make like thousands of pounds off that, and that's the one thing that makes me think I should get into Twitter and also.
Oh, and you should go viral.
One day, Hannah.
Well, you send 4 tweets a year and then you delete half of them when you get embarrassed. So,
and if you've seen one of those tweets, listeners, a very limited edition, like the art we're about to discuss.
Well, actually, me and Caroline once had a conversation about how it's a turn on when our boyfriend, because spoiler alert, Gavin is Caroline's boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
For the term live-in lover.
Live-in lover.
Yeah.
How it's a turn-on that you don't use Twitter that much.
Okay.
It is a turn-on.
But then again, you do berate me a lot for not profiting off things where I get mentioned, so.
Ah.
That's true. So this is a massive segue, but the other day, our friend Ella tweeted a picture that Gavin had taken of her.
Oh, I saw that. It was lovely.
Nice picture.
And then Nigella Lawson responded to the picture saying, what a beautiful picture. And then Ella tagged Gavin, being like, he took this beautiful picture of me. And Gavin's Twitter bio read, Nigella Lawson has seen me sleeping.
Oh, so Nigella, is that Lawson, true?
It's true, but not in person. I don't remember what it was. Basically, it was a picture of me asleep at a house party, which happens often. And Nigella had seen it and liked it. And then I thought, she's seen me asleep at my most vulnerable, and she liked it. So that must
so
be
that
a thing.
Was your Twitter bio anyway.
Nigella, all lowercase to let everyone know I was joking. Nigella Lawson has seen me sleeping, and Nigella saw that but didn't comment.
She saw the picture of you saying that you've seen her sleeping.
Yes. Yes.
You and Nigella, you're definitely gonna shoot her next book cover. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. Well, that was my in, and then Ella texted me about it, and I didn't realise that she meant Nigella had seen the actual bio. And I just went, lol. And then I realised about 8 hours later when I got home and checked WhatsApp and realised exactly what happened, that I'd massively fucked up and I should have capitalised when I had my chance. Oh, well, so that's a pretty good summation of my Twitter like persona.
Yes.
Missing the boat and then realising, oh, Nigella's pissed off.
I have misrepresented myself.
There.
So Gavin, you're going to tell us kind of why art is so damn expensive. Like, it doesn't make sense, really, that art's so expensive.
No, so it's like, well, Picasso used to pay for dinners with sketches he did, which is like a really baller move, but also kind of a like horrible thing for a guy to do. Like, imagine like saying, no, we need your money. Because you did a sketch on a napkin like, of like,
I've got to pay my rent.
I will do a portrait of you. That's Picasso.
Also in a pre-eBay world as well. So it's not like...
You can't do anything with that.
Like, it's probably worth a lot, but the waiter doesn't know an art dealer.
Yeah, and you've got to go to someone who goes to someone. It's not going to happen. You can't put that online.
And how can you prove it? You
know. Yeah.
So anyway, art never used to cost that much money. And it's a weird day today, actually, guys, because today is the 35th anniversary of an auction that changed... why art now costs so much money. It was called the Skull Auction, not with a K, with a C, but it is Halloween, so the Skull Auction.
Of course.
This was a guy called Robert Skull, who owned...
He sounds fit.
He wasn't fit. His wife was pretty hot. In fact, Warhol did a couple of paintings of her. And even the director of the Metropolitan Museum of Art was like, I want to get a painting of her. She's a pretty good-looking chick. I made no bones about it.
Oh, it's New York. It's the 60s. Everyone's awful.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the accents a lot.
Yeah. So his auction was the first time anyone had ever sold off their entire collection as like a mass hoard and treated it like essentially as a commodity.
Okay.
And this
so
guy,
like he'd curated it.
Like what Saatchi is now or was in the early 90s, he was like way, way before that.
Right.
I don't really know who Saatchi is. Like, I know he's mega rich and mega famous and he was bad to Nigella Lawson.
Your personal friend.
Again, your personal friend.
Very much on topic right
but
now.
But is he just he's just an art guy?
He owned an advertising agency, earned lots of money and went around plucking people from obscurity, making them famous by curating them in shows and then they shot to fame and he made loads of money off that fame. So actually it's analogous to Robert Skull because he did that but before Saatchi. That's a really, really short, condensed version of what happened.
Because Saatchi sort of like pioneered Damien Hirst and all those.
Yeah.
So tell me what happened at this art auction. How were people responding to it? What went on?
So it was the first time that the public had really got involved in an art auction, and he made sure that happened. He was a seriously shrewd guy, advertised it loads. Even he would sell in his taxi business because he married into a taxi business in New York, which obviously is a good idea. Would advertise the show in his taxis, and then he advertised his taxis at the art show. So this guy got me. His wife showed up to the show wearing a jacket with Skull's taxis on the middle, like emblazoned in diamonds and stuff like that. It was crazy. It was like Trump before Trump. Like this guy got it. He loved publicity.
He just
loved himself a bit. There's a hilarious archive clip of him sitting in the front room of his house talking about how, you know, art is acquisition is involvement and I just do it to help the little guy and it's not about me. And the cameraman must have known what he was doing. Like he slowly pans out and over his fireplace is an enormous picture of his own face. It's so big. It's like a Manhattan loft. Like, you know, these apartments had like, you could put two ladders on top of each other and not touch the ceiling and it goes from floor to ceiling. It's like, if you were in that room, it is the most imposing picture of someone
amazing.
Oh, that's just me. That's what I do. So anyway, he puts on the show. The public love it. The prices of his art that he bought for really not very much is astronomical. There's a painting called Double White Map by Jasper Johns that ends up selling for, it's a 2,500% markup from what he paid for it. And the artist didn't get any kickback. And they hated him. They hated him so much. So many people, the artists protested against the show. They ended up leaving New York because they were so pissed off.
Artists normally get a little percentage of the resale value when it sells?
It had never been a problem up until that point, so they never bothered. So he changed all that. So they actually lobbied Washington after this, some American artists, and they nearly got it passed and then it got kicked back. So since that show, no artist has ever made any money off the back of that. But it changed the politics of it after that show. So Robert Rauschenberg, who's quite famous, you might have heard of him. He's like a pop artist, came up with Warhol. He's kind of on par with them. He's like the critics' version of Warhol. The public know who Warhol is, but Rauschenberg's like, you know, the fuckboy of the critics. Everyone
Knows
him. He picketed the show and got a bunch of artists to pick at the show with him. And they had, like, literally outside the show marching. They had really rubbish chants. It was like, they buy with their millions, they buy with their millions. It was like the worst chant.
They kind of overthought it.
Yeah.
Because they're all artists. Like, yeah. They're not like the working man. They're just like, it's too intellectual, this chant.
Yeah. Rauschenberg was pissed. He had his painting sold for like he sold his painting to this guy for like $1,000. And Robert Skoll would always be like, three sales are nothing. Like that sort of, you know, he wouldn't buy your paintings unless you sold him three for a cut rate. And then he sold Rauschenberg paintings for like 40 grand, 60 grand, 80 grand. This Jasper Johns painting sold for 250K and he bought it for 10 grand. Jasper Johns was like,
oh my God.
You'd be pissed, wouldn't you? You'd be so pissed.
I feel like this guy is like the art equivalent of like the next sale. They just make it seem so much more than it actually is. They just open at 5 a.m. so people think, wow, it must be amazing. Next is shit.
So Robert Rauschenberg pickets the sale of the auction and he shows up at the end. And by this point, I think it's pretty clear from the footage that Rauschenberg is pretty drunk at this point. But he sees Robert Skoll being like massed by the media. They're all taking pictures of him. Oh, you're a millionaire now. How does it feel? And he's like, well, I guess that's how it goes. Rauschenberg like barges in and has like a really tense chat. And you can tell Skoll is like, oh Christ, Rauschenberg's here. And Rauschenberg's like, hey, like he's like majorly cut here at this point.
He said like 12 beers at least. The Oliver Reed of the art world.
And he goes up to him and Skoll tries to worm out. And at the end of the conversation, he's like, well, let's go, Ethel. That's his wife. And as he's leaving, Rauschenberg's like, I'm missing my chance. And he just like shoves him in the shoulder, like boom. And you know when you are annoyed with me, Caro, and you push me, but it's like 5% harder than it was a joke push. So it's like...
All right, this must be a lecture about art, not a revelation of my abusive tendencies as a partner.
Everyone knows what a 5% too much of a push is, where you're like, I could push you, but it's just letting you know I meant that.
Where,
Rauschenberg
like,
does like a 10% push, and Skull's like, oh, fuck. And then everyone you can tell knows what's going on. And he's like,
give me a physical breakdown of Skoll's like, is he like a weed? Is he like a big fat art critic guy?
He's like a beardy, sort of grey flecks in his beard, brushed hair back, green blazer. I'd say he's just
like Gary Oldman. Would Gary Oldman play him?
Yeah, but like a hairy Robert De Niro.
Okay.
Haggard, hairy Robert De Niro. Okay. Like just on this side of handsome. You know what I mean?
Right,
not quite. You couldn't say it, but you know, he's fine.
Ethel, what were you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go. Anyway. Rauschenberg shoves him, and then everyone's like, oh, Christ. And he's like, Rauschenberg says, you didn't even buy me flowers. And Skoll's like, buy you flowers? What, did somebody die? And he's like, let's go, Ethel. And he's like, you buy the next one at these prices. You didn't even pay anything for these. And he's like, well, you know, I work for you, you work for me, we work for each other. And it's really
so
awkward. And the cameramen are like, what's going to happen? Is he going to deck him? Is this like WWF? But it didn't exist at that point. Slam him through a table. And then he goes, you buy the next one. And he goes, well, I'll come and take a look at it. And I'll stop the cold. Stop the cold. And then he hugs him. Rauschenberg's like, okay. And then they hug it out. And then it's like so awkward.
Why is this not a film?
And
I'm intrigued. I'm like, enthralled.
And then it dissipates. And then that's the end. And then nothing. Obviously, the end of the story isn't that he pays all the artists royalties and everyone lives happily ever after.
Yeah.
It's Skoll gets away with it and the art market is never the same.
I'm so annoyed at the story, mostly because there was an opportunity. He says, oh, has somebody died? And Rauschenberg could have said, no, but somebody got fucked.
Yeah.
And he didn't say that?
Yeah. Or like, the art world
died.
Is at your feet.
Yeah. The art world is dead. Yeah. So many
good killed
comebacks.
The art world. Yeah.
So what's the fallout?
So the fallout is that this happens in 1973. After that, loads of things. That was a result of loads of things. Artists were like, okay, we need to get our cut now. So they started charging higher prices at the start.
Mm.
Other people started looking at the show like, oh my God, you can make a ton of money with art. So the conversation turned from what does this painting mean to how much does this painting cost?
Right.
And then it became a whole thing. And this is before the 80s. Then the 80s happened. The 80s! You know, it's like not a decade known for its restraint. And then prices just went insane.
Right.
So people would buy a Picasso. And at that point, art just went from being something that's about aesthetics to just an investment. And like, you know, the CEO of like Citibank would buy a Picasso for 5 million. Mm. This actually happened. He bought a Picasso for 6 million in 1981, sat on it for 8 years, and sold it for 48 million in 1989.
Right.
So at that point, it just becomes like, that's the start of the story. And that's the discussion about art we have now, which is the start of the story, the middle of the story, and the end of the story is how much does it cost? That's how people know about art. Mm. And that's why you get like people at the Sun in the early 90s being like, it's an unmade bed. I'm not paying £5 million for an unmade bed. Mm, it's a shark in a tank. Why am I paying? And, you know, and that's why critics who have lived long enough to see this before the prices went crazy are just up in arms. Like, the art market and the prices in the art market are the big shock factor of the last 50 years.
It's difficult as well, isn't it? Because if you're starting out as an artist and you're creating something which is, you know, you think is really good or whatever, you still can't charge, you know, £50,000 for your painting until you're like a bit famous. And then there's still someone who's going to profit off of you selling something for £200.
It's like trend forecasting. It's like, you know what I mean? Like everyone's, I mean, we're all in this room, we've all been in the creative industry in different senses. You kind of, you feel the temptation to go with what's hot in 6 months to get the uplift, and you want to catch the jet stream of fame and be like, well, I'm on the thing now. You know what I mean? You want to do that. So it becomes much more about like guessing the next thing rather than art, which is what it's supposed to be about, quote unquote, which is judging what you are versus the world and how to make something out of that. And also art, again, big conversation, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, what we're talking about here are art objects. Like, no one's buying performance art. You can't buy... There's, like, no performance artists make money, really. Marina Abramovich, but that's off her fame as opposed to her actual works. You can't really buy someone staring at you.
Yeah. I always read about artists in ES magazine, like, every week, and it was the art issue last week, I think, because of Freeze, and Marina Abramovich was on the cover. And that's what I have no... I feel like I can't even scratch the surface of art, because what intrigues me is who decides if the person is cool and worth millions.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I know that people always say this, and there is a comeback to it. Like, when people go to the Tate and they go, I could have done that. And
my kid could have done that.
But he didn't.
Yeah.
Right? But then who decides, like, if I'd done the exact same thing as Anish Kapoor or... Anish Kapoor?
Yeah.
Or Damien Hirst or whatever. Let's say I'd done it before them. Mine wouldn't sell for £1 million.
Yeah.
So it makes you think, like, how do you create that buzz of like this cow in formaldehyde is worth trillions of pounds?
Well, it has to have like a patina, you know, not the actual physical thing. Like, it has to have a kind of an aura or a glow around it as a thing.
Je ne sais quoi.
Like, if you were to, like, John Berger did an amazing thing on this. He's like, if you were to find out this is just a champagne flute, I guess, from IKEA.
Probably, yeah.
If you were to find out that's like the last champagne flute that Diana held before she died, suddenly that takes on a whole new thing.
And it was.
And it takes on that kind of that aura, that sense of like, am I allowed to touch it? Should I touch it? And that's what the money attempts to do.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like you can't judge it. Suddenly it's so expensive. Who the hell are you? Who are you, Mr. £24,000 a year, to say this thing is not worth something? It's like strikes you blind.
Yeah.
Robert Hughes, Australian art critic, was always like, these prices, they have a cultural function. Their function is to strike you blind. And it was always like, you'd always talk about the price of art just completely taken out of the realm of reality, which is what it's supposed to be for.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about that is there's almost like a reciprocal thing. So it's like the money attaches meaning to the art, but the person spending the money then gets the glow of the art attached to them.
Yeah.
They're a person who understands and gets art.
Hmm.
So do you think that's why maybe that the prices exploded in the 80s, because it's this age of new money and people making a lot of money very quickly, and they're like almost trying to like buy their way into a class by liking art.
Plus, and it's not all bad. Like the idea that art should be... The director of the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York in the 60s was all about like breaking down barriers, and why should going into an art gallery be any more aristocratic than going into a movie theatre? It's all about just making it available to you. It shouldn't be treated like an academic subject. And like, no one would argue with that. But then it gets taken way too far, and it just gets taken out of the realm of reality. Fine art should be treated as this one thing that gives you special experiences that you can't experience in any other way. And now where we go to for that is the movie industry. And no one now seriously is in fine art for that reason, for getting that kind of life experience, for getting that sort of special experience. We go to movies for that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting you said that, because I went to an exhibition at the Barbican not too long ago, and it was a photography exhibition, and there were some really nice photos, and photos like quite accessible, right? You just kind of look at them and you're like, oh, well, that's real life, but it looks really nice.
Yeah. That's such a brilliant... Yeah.
But the captions that they've put underneath these photos were just absolutely unreadable.
Yeah.
You just could not understand understand what they were trying to say because they were referencing different artists and they were referencing different styles. And it just felt like, to me, as someone who I enjoy art, but I don't know loads about it, and I certainly don't know loads about photography. And as someone who just kind of like, you know, paid £10 or whatever to go to this exhibition, I was just like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Like, they yeah. don't want me to be
I had that
here
on day
because
one of art
I'm literally,
school.
I can't understand this.
Yeah, I had that on day one. I went to Chelsea. It was like everyone just trying to ism each other off, like how many isms they could chuck into a comment. I was like, I didn't come here for this. And then people yeah. were like, what's wrong? Do you not want to talk about futurism versus modernism? It's like, I do, but I'd rather you left that out unless you had to use a shorthand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to talk
yeah.
to you about what this means to me. And anyone who has that feeling, the pill you want to take is John Berger. He just rips all that away, and it's just, oh my God, Ways of Seeing is like, you can available on YouTube if you want to watch it. Oh my God, it's amazing. There's like clips of him showing art to kids, and they just, they're in a school class and they like just critique it amongst themselves. And me and Caroline watched this, what was it, a couple of weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I secretly had a, like a little cry.
Not secretly, guys.
There's one bit where the kids are just talking about this painting by Caravaggio, and then just like being like, "Oh, it looks like what are they saying? Like,
say, oh, is it a boy or a girl? I don't know.
I can't really tell. It's a boy.
It's a picture of Jesus having an argument with two of the apostles.
Yeah.
And any adult would know that because they would see all the references immediately.
Sure,
but the kids are like, it's got long hair. He's like, oh, is it a boy or a girl? I don't know. He's having a fight. I don't know.
Yeah, and he starts talking about the basket of fruit. Like, I don't really like grapes, but he's put grapes in there. You know, stuff like that. And they're just, like, they make it. The point being is that they make it about their own life.
Yeah.
They make it relevant to themselves. It's not like an academic thing where you have to look at it and like, you know, the painting's called like The Supper at Emmaus and you have to know what Emmaus is. You know what I mean? It's that they just think like, yeah. oh, does this mean something to me?
But what's actually great about that specific moment in the documentary is that the kids are looking at it and they're debating over what the gender is of Jesus. And to us, that seems really silly because we're used to seeing pictures of Jesus with long, brown, tumbling hair,
Chad
right?
Kroger hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Chad Kroger.
Chad Kroger. He's always a clean living Chad Kroger, isn't he? And, what they end up actually revealing is that like Caravaggio was gay, and actually there is a feminization of his male characters in a sense. And they end up revealing more than like any, you know, middle brow art student would ever.
And they got
there
on their own,
you know?
Just as a result of chit-chatting in a classroom.
And curiosity and passion and, you know, yeah.
And the reason I got upset looking at it is because I hadn't seen it for 10 years and I went back to when I was at school and I realised that is how you talk about art.
Yeah.
That is how you talk about art.
And I think that's what alienates a lot of people, because they're like, oh, there's a specific way you're supposed to talk about art.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's just, and that's what comes back to the, this is all about the money thing, because you feel like you can't talk about it because it's, I mean, what's that painting that went for of Jesus, like £350 million? For what? I know it's a Leonardo painting, but like, for what?
Yeah.
Somebody go see the Mona Lisa and you realise like you could put that in a tote bag and walk out because it's not very big. You're like, I queued up for this.
You know when you were talking about the
glow? It's the size of an iPad.
Yeah. You know when you were talking about the glow and the sort of aura, nostalgia, yeah. the aura, yeah, of an object. When I went to see the Mona Lisa in the Louvre, I thought it was going to have that. I thought I was going to feel something, not necessarily about the subject of the painting, but just like the aura of the painting.
Mm.
And it was so anticlimactic and so disappointing, because it was like 20 tourists taking a photo of it, and it was in this, it felt no
yeah it
poignancy
kind of feels
or
plain, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
obviously it doesn't kind of look plain because you're like, oh, it's the Mona Lisa, but actually
yeah.
if you were just looking at it on its own, devoid from any kind of like context,
yeah,
you'd still be like, it's a good painting.
The thing is, if the Mona Lisa was hanging in the National Portrait Gallery alongside all those other portraits of people you've never heard of by artists you never heard of, you just walk right past it, wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you would. Because the National Portrait Gallery is full of amazing... That's the best gallery in the country, I think. Like, because it's just got... You know, when you look at pictures of people, that there is something that stirs within you, like, oh, wow, that...
It totally
that,
does, doesn't
that portrait.
It? Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas, like, big landscapes and stuff, I don't really... I'm just like,
it's hard, it's hard to lock in.
Some of those stuff, I mean, you've got to remember, though, like, when a lot of those landscapes were done 200-300 years ago, that people would have seen what, first of all, you have to be quite rich to see the paintings, and second of all, people would see what, like 50 images in their whole life.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, they
yeah.
wouldn't see a picture for 2 months, and then they'd see that, and then they would sit in front of it and they'd talk about it, and all the paintings meant something, and the fact that there was a dog in the background and the sun was coming up, was it the morning or was it evening, that changes the meaning of it. It's like, it's a whole book in a thing. And so, but we've now lost that because we don't need it, you know. We've got, you know, people start talking about like if Michelangelo was around now, he would think of the things he would paint. It's like, no, he wouldn't. He'd be in Hollywood doing an awesome film.
Yeah.
Like, that's the painting of our time.
He'd be in Silicon Valley or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's the painting of now. You know, painting isn't the art of our time at all. Like, no one's talking about painting.
Yeah.
And so the Mona Lisa actually is a funny one because that, you know, you could argue that started the whole thing before. The reason Skull got into collecting it is because the Mona Lisa visited New York in 1963. The Louvre sent it off. And it was part of this whole like publicity wave to boost New York's cultural center. The Kennedys wanted to do it. And they put the Mona Lisa on a bed. They strapped her to a bed and put it on a liner and sent her across the sea, and they guarded it, and it was an air-conditioned plush suite, and it was, the painting was on a bed, and then it got, this big crate was put out and the press were all there in Manhattan and on Hudson Bay, and it was this massive publicity thing. And then for 1 month it was on show in the Met. And that was the first ever like blockbuster show in America, and like, apparently 1 million people saw it in a month, and they all shuffled past, and it was like a queen lying in state. You know what I mean? Everyone's like quiet, and it shuffles past, and everyone wants to get their pictures and stuff like that. And it was like 5-6 people deep. They would just shuffle past, and they'd be like shoved through, and the queues were like down, just up the avenue, out the door. And then that began a whole like wave. They called it like a cultural extension of the arms race, because the Kennedys wanted it to be seen like, oh, this is where it's happening. This is where the culture is happening. Not in Russia, nowhere, not in Europe, the US. This is where it's going down. And then that started a whole public interest in art, when pop art came in and post-war aspiration, and everyone was involved in the media and like democratizing of art. Skull took that and fucked us in 73.
Well, he just did the American thing, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, sold it all.
He had
like,
the power. He had money. Any problems? Yeah, he did. Yeah, exactly.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
That's what I feel like, that's America's thing. I feel like America is, of the art world, what Victoria Beckham is to fashion. Like, I am fashion. Please, I am part of the establishment. Oh, you're not quite.
Like, yeah, we'll let you in.
I love her, but like, it's just, and America's never going to be what you think. Ooh, culture.
Is there a situation for the world for which there is not a Beckham paradigm?
Because I was actually going to use them as like, you know, they're very upwardly mobile family, in that they both kind of come from like, I know Victoria Beckham wasn't like really poor or anything, but like, they both kind of working lower middle class people that like now they're into like, they like want to be friends with all these artists, and she makes artists do installations in her shop, and it's like that thing of like,
didn't Brooklyn Beckham photograph Sophie Turner?
Yeah,
for like V magazine.
Yeah, exactly. And he does like, you know, they collaborate with artists and stuff like that, because it's like, that's the sign of being cool.
Yeah, it's like, true. They're legitimizing themselves with art. Yeah,
with art, yeah,
yeah. And so it's that's the thing though. It's like, talking about the movie industry, you could argue that going to fine art is arguably the last place where it's supposed to be a direct communication between what I think, what the artist thinks and feels, and you. You can go to someone and say, I want that painting. And you haven't got to go through the Hollywood system. You've not got to go through a producer. It's just that I did a thing and I'm selling the thing. That's in its pure form. That's what it should be. But in order to actually make a living and exist in the world, you just can't do that. You have to get the art dealers involved, and then it becomes like a trend forecasting thing. And, you know, a dot on a piece of paper, like I said, because the pattern of thing can suddenly take on a whole new meaning, when really it's just a dot on a piece of paper. And people punk this all the time. People like fake it and, you know, do fake artworks and things like that. And it's like, oh, you see what we're doing? And no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We mentioned Banksy in the introduction. Like, what do you think of it? Obviously, I'm sure everyone has heard.
Yeah.
But recently, a painting of his was sold at Sotheby's, or was it even a painting? Like a drawing, a print? I'm not sure what it was.
I think he actually did that spray. Because you can make prints of stuff, but I think he actually did the spray paint.
It was actually, okay, yeah. And then there was a shredder in the bottom of the frame. And as soon as it was sold, as soon as the hammer went down, the painting fell through the shredder and actually got jammed halfway. Apparently it was meant to shred the whole thing.
Oh, did it?
Yeah,
I didn't
apparently.
Know that.
But what do you make of that?
I don't buy that it was meant to go all the way through. Like, because I think it was delayed. Because it stays as an intact object. If it's half done... First of all, as if Sotheby's didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, oh, here's a frame.
Yeah.
I've never used a period frame before, but I'm going to use it. And it's very heavy, but don't look inside or scan
it.
Oh. You know what I mean? And they could get in a lot of trouble, actually, because of that, because they could be seen as fixing the prices, because it was an event and a stunt. But the Banksy thing is like an extension of what Starchy was doing, like we were saying, because it becomes about the publicity and the stuntiness of it and the memeableness of it. And people now want to just talk about the meme. Oh, that's the shredded thing. Like, imagine having a non-shredded Banksy that looks like that. You're like, oh, I got done there.
Yeah.
I should have bought it. Should have waited 2 months.
Yeah.
So you don't think that it's like a worthwhile commentary on art dealership at all? Do you think it's totally cynical?
Yes. When it comes to him now, like, he's lost. You could say he's doing this as like a long-term performance art piece or whatnot, and business is the best art and blah blah blah. But like, if you're going to, I mean, Will Gompertz of the BBC said this was the biggest moment in art since Duchamp's urinal, like, which happened like 100 years ago. I read that. I mean, you saw me reading that. I was like, close the laptop. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, it is a stunt, and I get that, but I wouldn't say it's the biggest moment in art.
Yeah. I don't know. He's kind of playing off that kind of like bad boy, like, oh, I don't play by the rules. I'm going to shred my own thing, but also, the price is going to triple and I'm going to profit off that. You know what I mean?
I'm Banksy, like, you know, I'm a rascal.
It is.
I'll rascal you out of your money.
It is. It's like the guy walking around, the 55-year-old guy walking around with his Rage Against the Machine hoodie on. It's like, mate, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. And also the painting itself, like, no one's talking about the fact. It's just a girl with a balloon. Like,
yeah, it's the one that, like, you'll find in Camden Market on T-shirts.
Yeah.
I did have that T-shirt, like 10 years ago.
But then again, like, I don't really like it as a piece of graffiti, but now I'm forced to have, like, a strong opinion about it because, like, you know what I mean? It makes you insane. I'd see that on a street corner, I'd be like, oh, someone did that, fine. But now I have to be like, you hear all this like noise and you have to sort of go mindfulness on everyone and be like, I will shut it out and just go to a gallery.
Yeah.
And like, so like, talking about Robert Hughes again, like, he was, he's dead now, he's been dead like 5 years, but he was probably the last generation of people that, like he says himself, that could go to a museum and not even think about how much it costs once, like, at all. It's like impossible to go to a museum now without even for a bit thinking, that's a lot of money, or that's special. You know what I mean? You go to any graduate show, you don't think it's that special, but suddenly if you hang that on the wall of the Tate Modern, you're like, oh my God, wow, someone sees something in that. I don't know it.
Yeah,
otherwise,
yeah.
you just don't give a shit. Like, you know, if I went away and spent 10 grand on a painting and came home, you'd like...
Leave you.
You'd leave me. I left open. Yeah, and it's like... Yeah, and so you just have to... You have to just, like, it's a Herculean effort to make up your own mind. And these prices just come there to just, like, boot you out and say, you don't matter. It's just the market thing. But now you could argue this is just that the last cries of an irrelevant art form, just trying to get what it can before it goes out. And then everyone's just going to say, fuck this.
Do you think that's what's going to happen then? What do you think is the future of the art world?
Well, how
huge
the
question.
Hell? So, say, so like,
in
so,
2 minutes.
So taking that painting that's been sold, the new Leonardo that was found, that got sold for £350 million. It's been loaned to the Abu Dhabi Louvre. They've made a Louvre in Abu Dhabi now. No one knows who bought it. It's supposed to be, I think it's an Arab buyer, secret Arab buyer. It's like, how is that going to make a profit? Everyone's like, how? What? It's not even a good painting. I mentioned Chad Kroeger early on because it looks like a really crappy Chad Kroeger, a no-neck Chad Kroeger, if you look at it. There's one good bit in it, the hand, if you see, like, the right hand is pretty decent, but it looks like he's holding like a weird like wine gum. If you check it out, it's like a weird unflavoured wine gum, and he's just sort of, don't even have a background in the painting. It's not very good, it's rubbish.
Oh, but that's what's wrong with everything. It's just like, oh yeah, okay, someone in Dubai with no fucking taste has just spent a shitload of money on it for the sake of money and taken all the fucking pathos out of it.
I just don't understand how anyone can just expect it. There's artprice.com, I think literally it's called artprice.com, where you can check the provenance of something and, you know, over time it gains value. But man, surely this is like a really long, do you call it? Tulip mania or whatever. It's just another one of them.
Tulip mania?
You never heard of Tulip Mania?
That's
surely
great,
a whole
though.
Other episode.
No, I've heard of that. I've read a book called Tulip Fever, which had it in. But basically, it was about when the Danes got obsessed with tulips. Was it the Danes?
Yeah, it's like inflated market prices way beyond the value of the thing.
Oh, wow.
And everyone just agrees that this thing is worth a lot of money until everyone wakes up one day and goes, what the fuck are we doing?
It's like the king has no clothes.
Yeah. We have all the tulips, the king has no clothes.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, the Dutch went mental and just bought loads of tulips for like 5 years, and then the prices went sky high, and then
it's not even like orchids, which are like difficult to keep. Like tulips go anywhere.
Yeah,
fuck tulips, you know. Basic flower.
I think it was this is the 1700s. I think they were just very bored.
Yeah, it's true.
Very boring time.
So Gavin, I'll see you at home. This has been a wonderful talk on the nature of art and commerce. But to wrap up, I think we should all go around the table. Let's talk about our favorite painting.
Okay,
Hannah, what's yours? What's the one thing that you'd be like, oh, I'd love that in my loo?
What paintings do I like? I think I'd like just one of those massive, massive old portraits of like a person on a horse.
It's the most you answer ever.
Oh my God, it is the most you answer
It would be that Queen Victoria picture of her when she was young from the MPG.
Yeah.
Because it looks like you.
Yeah.
And exactly. I believe it's also your WhatsApp photo.
With a nice, nice shiny horse.
Good. Alex?
I do like Tracy Emin of the Modern Artists, and I like her neon sign that says "It's different when you are in love."
So aww,
I'd have that on my.
That's very
room.
Good. Great answer, Gavin.
Yeah. There's that really famous one by Francis Bacon where it's like three bodies at the base of a crucifixion. That makes me a real basic for saying that, but like it's in the Tate Britain, and I went there when I was having like a really low point in my life, and it scared me, and I've never seen it since
Francis
then.
Francis Bacon does scare me.
That painting. I mean, everyone knows it. It's not like a secret.
Yeah, you took me to see that on one of our early dates.
Oh, did I?
Aww.
Yeah.
Oh,
right. Also, don't say you're basic because that just falls into the trap of like, oh, I can't like it.
No, my point being that it's not special. It's not like a special thing. Everyone says it, but that in particular. I remember seeing that and having like, you know when a submarine goes too deep and you hear it in the movies, you always hear it going creaking like, the whole thing, you hear it being crushed.
Oh,
I like felt like that when I saw it and I had to leave. I was like 23 having a really low point in my life and I felt that and I walked away and had like an anxiety attack on the steps of the Tate Britain. I was like, that's good painting.
That's good painting.
I was like, huffed that painting from out of a brown bag. Yeah. Like it was a paint can.
Yeah. Go and see good that in painting. Person. It's like a really dark room and they look really scary.
Ooh, wow. Caroline?
I really like, this is a basic answer, I really like that one that's like, it's a picture of a pipe and it says, C'est une pomme pipe.
I didn't know that.
It's about what? Magritte,
I think. I think it's
Magritte.
It is Magritte. And it's basically like
he's the guy that did like the painting of like an apple and it was called like The Horse.
He's very Twitter. You know what I mean?
He is.
He's very funny.
He is. He's so online.
Yeah, he's so online. He's
the guy smoking a pipe.
No. It's literally a picture of a pipe and then in French underneath it says, this is not a pipe.
Okay, right, I've got it.
And it's very much like, it's a picture of a pipe, it's not a real thing.
In fact, I think his paintings might have made it onto like HMV posters. You know what I mean?
Like he was one of those guys. I was thinking like a pipe, like a metal pipe.
No,
that's
smoking
why,
pipe.
Like
a smoking pipe.
That's why
smoking
I was confused.
Pipe. Yeah. He was the inspiration for all the Pink Floyd album.
Lots
of like weird clouds and a man looking in a mirror. But when you see the reflection, it's the back of his head.
Ooh.
That sort of thing.
I don't like that so much.
All right, fine.
I like the pipe though.
We're not having it in our house.
I'd have that in the loo. There's a picture hook as well that's empty. So we'll leave it at that.
Thank you, ladies.
Gavin, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Please use his real name, Gavin Day.
Gavin Day.
Gavin Day. Where can people find out more about you on your Twitter account that you never use?
You can find me on my very limited edition Twitter account at _GavinDay.
Ah. And on Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram, which by the time this airs will be absolutely awash with new content, so I would definitely go to my Instagram.
Yes.
_GavinDay.
Gavin Day.
Clean. I like it.
Mm.
Like me.
Thanks for listening to this bonus episode. We'll be back on Tuesday with a whole new show, but until then, we would like to thank Harry Harris for our jingles, Gavin Day for our artwork and art knowledge today, and Soho Radio Studios for the recording space. Oh, can you tell us, just as an Easter egg, for the very long time listeners, when we started the podcast, we had a whole joke about you and talcum powder.
Oh, yeah.
Please, can you tell us where you're at with your talcum powder usage?
I haven't used talc in about 18 months. And that's, I swear that's true.
Why?
I just grew out of it and I realised, I think physically I grew out of it as well. It became too cumbersome. It's like a paste.
I've not got a nappy on.
No, and it... I don't know. I think I read too many articles. There was all those articles about, oh, it's carcinogenic and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's only for women. But then I thought, do I need this?
What if it goes... Do you need, like, carcinogenic powder near your dick hole?
What if it goes... Yeah. What if it goes near any of my holes? I don't want to deal with that. Yeah. And also, like... You know, the life I lead, someone can want to have sex with me at any minute. And if I'm covered in talc, that can't happen. Yeah, so it's like...
See, ladies, you can change a man. The talc habits.
I slowly grew out of throwing chalk on my balls.
Well, thank you very much for enlightening us.
You're very welcome. That's his public exclusive. There we go.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.